2 Corinthians chapter 9. 2 Corinthians chapter 9. I mentioned the last couple of weeks that there's more written in the New Testament about giving and about how we view our possessions than there are about baptism and attendance and a number of other things. It was obviously something the Holy Spirit knew could be a stumbling block, and that's why God has left us so much instruction and guidelines and principles about, you know, our giving and how we need to view these things. We saw in chapter 8 that when Paul is writing to the Corinthians, they had planned a year ago to get a collection together for these saints in Judea that were suffering. And so they had made arrangements, made plans. We don't know a lot about the plans other than that Paul said that started about a year ago. And he gives an example. He encourages them and motivates them, he says, by looking at the Macedonians, who even though they were in deep poverty, had the right attitude about their possessions. And so they weren't concerned about giving away, you know, what they had, because they knew God would take care of them. So they were able to give even beyond what Paul thought they could. He gives Christ as an example. Christ gave up all that he had and became poor so that they could become rich. So he gives some examples to encourage and motivate the Corinthians to carry out what they had planned. They had planned, purposed, to make this collection. And so Paul encourages them to carry through on their plans. And of course, we'll learn in this chapter about how we need a purpose. Yes.
There in verse 2 of chapter 9, he told the Macedonians about what the Corinthians were going to do to motivate the Macedonians.
Yep.
The Macedonians came through, so now he's using that to encourage the Corinthians.
That's right. That's what he does. Yeah, and he does that. Let's notice those first two verses. Now, concerning the ministering to the saints, it's superfluous for me to write to you, for I know your willingness, about which I boast to you to the Macedonians, that Achaia was ready a year ago, and your zeal has stirred up the majority. So he is wanting to make sure that all this comes about like it needs to come about. Even though, like we'd mentioned last week, it was a year ago, he wants this to their purpose and their plan and their desire to produce what it needs to produce. And this was a voluntary thing. Paul's not, when Paul first went to them, he doesn't say, okay, you've got to give this much money in a year and everybody's got to do this. And so that's not the way it was at all. It was a voluntary program. And so he says, you know, you remember your willingness. So it was something that they were not being coerced into doing. You know, giving, if we feel pressured or coerced into giving, then something's wrong from the very beginning. And we'll talk more about that in this chapter. But that's not the way giving is supposed to be. We're not supposed to feel like someone's got a thumb, you know, down on us, or someone's taking our wallet out and forcing us to give. That just destroys the whole concept of a free will offering. Now, a lot of religions, many of them, you have to give so much. You don't have an option. You have to give X amount of what you have. You don't have a choice, and so there's no free will about it. You are pressured into giving so much. Yes?
Mm-hmm. Project ahead what they're to give next year.
Yeah.
And they expect it from.
Oh yeah, they do. Absolutely. That is the truth. And there are other, you know, groups that do that. And you, I mean, it is you give this much. Yes, CL.
Well, the Jews were told to give 10%. I mean, that was a command to them.
Right.
And which under the Jew when God right. put it in place,
yeah.
he just give liberally, give freely.
That's right.
And, if your heart's in the right place and your mind's in the right place, it can be freely.
Yeah, that's right. Yes.
But unless your righteousness exceeds the righteousness of the Jews and the Pharisees, you shall have no likewise say the king.
That's right. Yeah.
So there's not a command to give more than 10%, but there's a stronger admonition that you better consider it.
There's an example. Yeah, and he does a lot of that in chapter 9. He tells us a lot about the power of influence. See, that's the first couple of verses talks about the power of influence. It's good. I remember a friend of mine that worshipped in Springfield years ago. He didn't have much money then. The Lord has blessed him since, and he does quite well now. But back then, we talked about a lot of things. He said he always wanted to give enough so that the IRS would audit him. That was his goal. It'd be such a ridiculous amount that the IRS said, hey, there's no way you gave that much money. That's a great goal. I haven't seen him in 2 or 3 years. I don't know if that's happened. But that's a great goal to give so much that it doesn't seem like it's remotely possible. But it's all about the willingness, the idea that you've been blessed so amazingly that even if you gave everything back, and of course God doesn't tell us to give everything back, but even if we gave everything back, we still wouldn't. We'd still be in God's debt. So that's the idea of free will. The idea of free will. We don't, this is the only means that's authorized for us to have money. I mean, we're not authorized to have bake sales or car washes or this or that or run restaurants or bowling alleys or all these other kind of things. This is it. Free will offering is the only thing that's authorized in the New Testament for us to do. And there just isn't anything else. So everything... all the work of the church, all our evangelism and benevolence and all these things comes from that one source. And again, it's not like a lot of religious groups that have all kinds of ways of bringing money in. The Bible is very specific. There's only one. It's just this collection that we take up every Sunday. That's it. And so everything we do comes from that source of money, what we're given freely. And so again, we don't go out and into the community and coerce people into giving us money. We don't do that because we're not authorized to do that. So it all comes from this. We do know that we are obligated to give. I mean, that's very obvious from a number of places. But as was mentioned, there's no specific amount. There's no specific percentage. There's no exact amount because it's all about free will and being generous and being liberal. And so Paul, when he begins with this chapter, he gives these examples of willingness and free giving and all that type of thing. Because he goes on and says in verse 3, yet I've sent the brethren, remember he talked about these brethren in the last chapter and we mentioned who they might be, lest our boasting of you should be in vain in this respect, that as I said, you may be ready. Remember Titus was one of the three, and at least there was a couple others for sure, that had been sent there to Corinth by Paul to make sure that the collection is ready. To make sure that the collection is ready when Paul comes. And when we go back to places like Acts chapter 20 and we talk about this collection, his trip to Corinth later didn't exactly happen as planned. The devil had something to do with it, he says. And so he might not have had much time when he got to Corinth to wait for them to have this collection. Remember, if you go back to 1 Corinthians 16, the first two verses, he talks about that because he wants it to be ready when he comes. He doesn't want to get there and it not be ready and then him have to kind of pressure them. He says, that's not what it's about. He says, I want it to all be ready. You've been collecting, or you've got it ready to give. You've been willing. You've been generous. You've been liberal with your giving. So that when I get there, or when they get there to pick it up, it will be ready. Because he says, lest if some Macedonians come with me and find you unprepared. See, that's what he didn't want. Unprepared. We, not to mention you, should be ashamed of this confident boasting. See, that's what he didn't want to happen. He get there, it's not ready, they're not prepared, they haven't given generously and willingly. He says, that's not what we want. Because he says, we should be ashamed of the boasting. Because he's been boasting that it'll be ready, there'll be a generous gift, and apparently, as we mentioned, the Corinthians were a whole lot wealthier than the Macedonians were. So, the idea certainly is that there would be a lot to pick up. Because of their wealth and their resources, they would have a lot to give to the saints back in Judea. So, he says, we want to make sure that you're prepared. Otherwise, it would be something that's shameful. Because they've made plans. They've made plans. Therefore, I thought it necessary to exhort the brethren to go to you ahead of time. And prepare your generous gift beforehand. Notice what he says already. It's going to be a generous gift. He doesn't know what it is, but he calls it a generous gift, which you had previously promised. Remember, a year ago they'd already said they were going to do this. That it may be ready as a matter of, and here's the big difference, generosity and not as a grudging obligation. See, that's not, Paul did not want it to be some sort of obligation. He wanted it to be free will. He wanted it to be a liberal, generous, cheerful thing. That they're so glad that they had a lot to give to people who didn't have a lot. So he says, I'm sending Titus and these other brethren to you so they can get you ready before he comes and others to pick it up. Take it back to Judea so that it's ready and that it's a generous gift, because he doesn't want to get there and them not have anything and then have them feel like they're obligated to give, because that just kind of nulls the whole thing when people feel that it's an obligation and they do it grudgingly. You know, they take money out of their wallet and give it to them, and it's just, you know, they don't want to give it, and they would rather spend that money on something else. Paul wants people then and today to realize that we're to give generously. Like Jesus said, it's better to give than to receive. It's more blessed. And that's the way we need to feel about it. It's more blessed to give than it is to receive. And that's the way it would be if we were thankful for what we have. In other words, if we're thankful and realize that God has given us way abundant, you know, beyond anything we could imagine, then giving back to Him is the easiest thing in the world. Yes?
In verse 5, I didn't catch just exactly how your word is read. The mind says that the same might be ready and balanced and not affected by covenants.
Yes. Exactly.
Then you're coveting what you had promised to give, yep, to the Lord and to the saints. And that's what he's telling, you know. And
absolutely.
If you purpose in your heart to give so much, then between the time you purpose it and the collection plate come around, then you put something left in, then you have kind of like Ananias and Sapphira. You said you're giving this, but in your heart you said you'd give this, but in reality you gave something else.
Yeah, very much like Ananias and Sapphira. If that's our attitude, because we are coveting that. I mean, if we're not, you know, if we don't freely give whatever it is we give, then we're really coveting it, because we're actually wanting it for ourselves.
Well, I put $20 in, but I'd really rather have not done that.
Than, yeah. Exactly.
If you went ahead and put it in, you had those thoughts, the guilt still.
Yeah, absolutely. And see, that's what Paul is really trying to stress with these people, is they must have the right attitude about their giving. They must. Whether it's $1 or $1,000, doesn't make any difference. It has to have the right attitude. Yes?
if we would give everything we had as a test to see if God would take care of us, we're wrong.
Yeah, that's true.
If we give everything out of faith, He probably will take care of us.
Yeah.
Well, not probably, He would take care of us. That if we didn't do it with any kind of ulterior motive, we just gave it.
That's the attitude thing. It's all about how we think and feel about what we're giving. And regardless of the amount, it's having that right attitude, not coveting it or not being greedy or anything like that. And that's what Paul doesn't want the Corinthians to do. He doesn't want to get there and then they don't have their collection. It's not a generous collection. And then they're going to feel obligated, and they're going to give something, but they're going to have the wrong attitude about it. And he doesn't want that because the attitude is so essential. I mean, it's absolutely essential how we feel about what we give. And it's critical. It's very, very critical. I think one, I think it's the American Standard that uses the word extortion. He wants it to be a matter of generosity and not as extortion. Because he doesn't want to get there and almost have to extort money out of them because they're so begrudging of what they have. He doesn't want that. So there's several things there in verse 5 that all goes back to the people's attitude about, you know, what they have. You know, we should, you know, our offering isn't acceptable to God if we feel like God or the church is extorting it out of us or forcing it from us. Then our worship, because giving is an act of worship, then our worship isn't acceptable because it's not in spirit and in truth. So just like, you know, our attitude has to be right when we pray, our attitude has to be right when we partake of the Lord's Supper and sing, our attitude has to be right when we give just as much. And if it's not, then that worship isn't going to be acceptable and God won't approve of it. The monies can still be used for something good, but it's certainly not going to help that individual because the attitude isn't right. We're begrudging what we have. So that's why the Bible tells us that word of purpose, what we're going to give. Word of purpose. Not just find some money in the couch on Sunday morning and say, that's what we're going to give, what I found in the couch. Okay? Wrong attitude. You know, it has to start on the inside. That's what he says. The giving has to start on the inside. Well, then he describes the cheerful giver. That's the next section. He describes the cheerful giver. We got maybe 5 minutes left. So he says, but this I say, he who sows sparingly will also reap sparingly. And he who sows bountifully will also reap bountifully. Well, this is an Old Testament theme as well as a New Testament theme. It's nothing new. He says, we're blessed based upon our giving. Just like if a farmer, if he wants to have a bountiful crop of corn, he can't go out and plant 6 seeds. He's going to have to plant a lot to reap a lot. He says that's an old truth in any realm. I mean, if you're going to want a bountiful harvest, then you're going to have to plant bountifully. Otherwise, it's not going to work. So if you're going to sow sparingly, then that's what you're going to get back. If you want to reap bountifully, you're going to have to sow bountifully. I think that's maybe the essence of why Jesus said it's more blessed to give than to receive. It's not about getting, it's about giving. So when we give, you know, each Lord's Day, and when we do it generously, Then over time, we kind of develop this attitude of giving with a generous heart and willing heart and liberally. You know, we develop that mindset over time, and it's a good attitude to develop. So let each one give as he purposes in his heart, not grudgingly or of necessity. For God loves a cheerful giver. That's who he loves. He loves a cheerful giver because A cheerful giver is doing it for the right reasons and with the right heart and with the right attitude. And he's not going to feel like someone's pressuring him to give. He's not going to feel like someone's got their thumb on him and he's being forced to give. He's glad. In other words, a cheerful giver is a thankful giver. He's not reluctant to give. He doesn't covet what he has. He doesn't want to hold on to it. He has the right frame of mind. Brother Camp, years ago, in commenting on this verse, wrote, "When the contribution basket passes in front of me, do I give or do I feel that I'm being robbed?" Well, that's thought-provoking, isn't it? Do I give or do I feel that I'm being robbed? Do I resent giving to the church? Do I try to excuse my miserly giving by charging the church with improperly or unwisely using the money? Any gift offered from this kind of heart would be giving by necessity. Would I be willing for everyone to know what I give? Would I be embarrassed to be the first to put money in the basket? Hey, I am the first one that puts money in the basket. I better be more careful next time. If so, why do I give? What motivates me to give anything? Boy, those are some, not all of those are from Brother Kent, but boy, those are thought-provoking questions about our giving. Because it is important, just like praying and partaking of the Lord's Supper. It's a vital part of our worship. You know, every Lord's Day, it's a vital, vital part. Not that that's the only giving we do. I know that you all are involved in giving in lots of different ways, but in particular, the collection we take. Our attitude toward it is very, very important. Well, we're out of time. We'll go back probably to verse 7, Lord willing, next Sunday morning. Appreciate all the thoughts because it is such an important topic.